I was right under the finger of God, you might say.
Whoa.
At the, the ceiling where the two... No, that was home. That's where... If I ever want to know where I was, that's where I was.
Welcome to the Pints and Pews podcast. I'm your co-host, Dennis.
And I'm your other co-host, Robert. And we're just a couple of guys talking the Catholic faith over a pint or two of our favorite beers.
So why don't you pour yourself a pint, pull up a chair, and listen in for the next little while.
As we take the faith seriously, but not necessarily ourselves.
And as always, if you want to take part in the conversation or have an idea for the podcast, leave us a comment or swing by our Facebook page and drop us a message.
Dennis, buddy, I guess I don't need to ask you how you're doing.
No, good. But yes, really enjoying this conversation with His Eminence and looking forward to the second half where we can hopefully get some insight into the conclave, maybe, Robert, if we and our listeners are lucky.
Yeah, well, I'm really pumped about part deux on our part talk deux. With His Eminence, Thomas Cardinal Collins, Archbishop Emeritus of Toronto. And yeah, we're going to ask him a few questions about the conclave. I think you have a few questions for him about his time as Archbishop of Toronto and Archbishop of Edmonton before that.
Yes, yes.
And then you've got a list of questions for him as well to get to know the College of Cardinals a little bit better there, don't you, sir?
Yes, the snap out to end the round, as we used to say, and reach for the top. Quick little firing questions at him. And we'll have to get another beverage, of course, because since it's two parts, we have to have two beverages.
Oh, exactly. I mean, when the conversation is that good and it goes that long, there's always a need for a second round, isn't there?
I know. It's funny that we'll probably have two parts, but we'll probably still have to get him back in the summer or next fall, just because he's such a wealth of information, Robert.
God willing. I mean, in that the wealth of wisdom that he has, right? I would love to just sit down and let him go. Just let the conversation go and be able to pick his mind over so many different things.
Funny, he's from this like small town Ontario in the 50s and 60s all the way to the princes of the church, eh? I don't want to say climb because I don't look it upon it as a climb, but certainly he's seen a lot in his 77 years, Robert.
Yeah, truly a blessed journey that he's had. Mm-hmm. And again, just the wealth of experience and the wealth of wisdom that he can share from all of that is beyond belief.
Incredible. We're lucky to have him as Archbishop for so many years in Toronto.
Exactly. Thanks be to God. Now, Dennis, however, as much as we like to ramble and we like to hear ourselves talk, the listeners aren't here to listen to us today. They're here not. To listen to His Eminence.
Would you rather listen to us or His Eminence? Don't answer that, Robert.
I think you already have the answer to that one, my friend.
I think we do.
So without further ado, here is part two of our conversation with His Eminence, Cardinal Collins.
All of these things coming together, your Eminence, finally points you through St. Paul and Edmonton, and thanks be to God. I'm speaking for myself. Hopefully I'm speaking for Dennis as well, but thanks be to God, you end up as our Archbishop here in Toronto, the largest archbishopric, I believe, of Canada.
Yeah, by far.
quite a weight on one man's shoulders to take on the archbishopric. And so I kind of wanted to ask you from that, and you don't need to name names or go into details, but wanted to ask, you know, some blessings, and also, again, because it is so large and probably unwieldy, some challenges that would be presented of spiritually guiding such a large flock.
Well, I love being a priest. I love being a bishop. I asked to be a priest. I didn't ask to be a bishop. Uh-huh. I was just called.
Funny how that works out, huh?
Yeah, I just was called in. They got a phone call and go, getting called in with a rector to teach. And I got a phone call from the nuncio, and he said, come and see me tomorrow. So I went to see him, and he said, when I call the priest in, is good news or bad news? This is good news. The Pope has made you Bishop of St. Paul, Alberta. Do you accept? I said, yes. Yes, well, certainly.
So do I have a choice?
Yeah. I didn't know. I had not really thought about it at all, but it was wonderful. It's a wonderful diocese. It's the same when I was at in St. Paul at my desk, and the nuncio called and said, The Holy Father's made you Archbishop of Edmonton. Is that you? Said, oh, certainly. Okay, wonderful. Right. And when I was at a meeting of the Alberta Bishops, I got a phone call, and the nuncio says, how are things in Edmonton? I said, oh, wonderful, great. And the Holy Father has made you Archbishop of Toronto. I said, oh, and I remember writing on a piece of paper, Toronto, so I keep that. That actually is true. I said, oh, when does that take place? Saturday, he said. Okay, this is Tuesday. I said, oh.
You finished your doctorate. You've come back. You're teaching probably about, what, 10 years at St. Peter's before you get
to 86 to 97. That's
right. So you get the call to St. Paul. So how long were you at St. Paul before you get the call to, oh, just a year and a half. And then you get the call to Edmonton. So then just getting back to St. Paul, did you have to look it up on the map?
Well,
are you like St. Paul, Alberta? What the hell?
I was going to ask the same question. Yeah. For those of us that our geographical knowledge of Alberta is a little bit limited, where is St. Paul, Alberta?
Well, St. Paul, Alberta is a wonderful town. It's up northeast of Edmonton. And what happened was in the late 1940s, they wanted to set up French-Canadian dioceses outside of Quebec. So they did three. Yarmouth was cut out of Halifax for the Acadian area. Mm-hmm. Ravensburg was cut out of Regina and southwestern Saskatchewan. And St. Paul was cut out of, it's a strip along the top, just above Edmonton, from Saskatchewan to British Columbia. Mm-hmm. Just a bar head on one end. It includes, St. Paul is more towards the Saskatchewan border, and Lloydminster is over further.
I was going to ask, there is something north of Edmonton in Alberta?
A long strip across Alberta,
Yeah, so we have that, and that would be in Edmonton, I saw Minster. But and then there was a strip coming down from the Northwest Territories along the edge of the Saskatchewan border. And this strip going east-west, which was St. Paul Diocese, in the middle, the block in the middle, the what you call the northeast, northwest block, was gravel, what is it?
Don't worry about it. Dennis has a hard enough time remembering, south part of his own town.
Gerard McLennan Diocese. But then what happened is around 1979, what they did is they cut the strip off at the Northwest Territory border of the north and attached it to St. Paul. So St. Paul was L-shaped along the strip along and then up the Saskatchewan border. And in that is Fort McMurray. No, that changed a lot because it meant St. Paul was going to grow because it's a huge economic thing. And there was also, they took two little parishes, Moranville and Legal. They added, took them out of Edmonton because I think they were financially able to support the diocese more. They were both French. So that was the diocese. I looked in the directory where those towns are, and I looked at a map to see roughly what it looked like.
You were able to get mileage? The diocese would pay you mileage for
85,000 square kilometers. And
place.
Back then, 50,000 Catholics, 85,000, 20-some parishes. And it was wonderful. And I went up the road. There's a road from Edmonton to Fort McMurray. So what I do when I visit Fort McMurray, which is the biggest parish in the diocese, I was living in St. Paul, about 5,000 people. But it was much more designed for a bigger place because the whole rural area around it all use it as a center. So there's a lot of facilities and good things in St. Paul. And there were, one side was Saddle Lake Reserve and the other side was Kahewan. And there's a beautiful pilgrimage at Kahewan, this wonderful mount they have there. And they would have torches going up and beautiful, kind of like a sail, like a tent or something at the top where we'd celebrate Mass for the people, the indigenous people there. It was just wonderful. And so anyway, that was St. Paul. But I would travel a whole day to get from St. Paul. You had to get up, go over, go along the Yellowhead. And then you hit the road going to St. Murray. Then you go all the way up. And you get to where the farmland gives away. You get Wandering River, and then there's a service station there. You can stop and get ready. Then you go another, a huge distance. You get to Mariana Lakes, and you better stop there and get tanked up and ready to go. Then another huge distance. So it's like a 4-lane highway through the forest, and suddenly there's McMurray. And it was, now that was 20 some years ago. Now it's much bigger probably. And it's a big city. Like it was a real city there, bigger than St. Paul. And I was always stop at the donut shop, which doesn't have a name, but it's the name of a shrine of St. Timothy. On the Timothy and Titus, so there I can say I went to the shrine of St. Timothy. And then I would go to the parish because there was the only Timmy's in the diocese. So I loaded up with carbohydrates and sugar. It was a great thing. I stayed there for a week or two because, you know, it was a lot of travel to get there. Then I would do confirmation down to Janvier and Conklin and down the roar of the roads and stuff. And it had these big, encampments of young men working in the oil
industry. Yep.
Murray, which was a lot of social issues and drugs and alcohol and stuff like that.
Unfortunately.
And, people, you know, flying in all kinds of drugs. And,
so a year and a half doesn't seem very long, though, Your Eminence.
But it was great. I loved it. Yeah. All and I thought, okay, there I'm good. I brought out a lot of my books out there. Like I sort of locked into books ever since I was a kid. And then I was just sitting at my desk, and I was staying at a former Francis Blood Monastery. It was with the bishop's residence. I had my place. I had a little. My sisters came out and visited me. It was very nice. Right across the street from a car dealership and everything. And a beautiful, wonderful diocese. But then I had a staff of one or two, you know, that was about it. But Edmonton was very good to us. Mm-hmm. When we were coming up to the year 2000, they provided us, they had like all kinds of departments and stuff like that, which we didn't have. So they provided us a lot of resources. So that's what big dioceses should do to little dioceses to help them. And I was very grateful. But then I was sitting and having a coffee in my room there, and I got a phone call, and I said, you know, the Holy Father wants you to be coadjutor. I was coadjutor Bishop of St. Paul, which means I was, I would succeed as soon as the other guy retired, Bishop Roy or Roy, Monsignor Roy or Bishop Roy. He was 77, actually, about my age now, but he retired. And so when he fully retired, I was installed as the bishop. And then Archbishop McNeil had retired. He turned 75. And so I was made coadjutor Archbishop of Edmonton. And in March of 1999, I moved to Edmonton and just across the North Saskatchewan River. And I settled into the house there because he knew it just a short time. He moved to an apartment like I'm doing here, you know. And then in September of 99, I was formally installed as the Archbishop of Edmonton. And it was 85,000 square kilometers too, a huge diocese. Over a million people in the city, and Red Deer down below, another big town, big city, and then Calgary below. And about 350,000 Catholics. There was also a Ukrainian bishop there. And, you know, a Windspear concert hall I go to and everything, you know, it's just a big, it was even bigger now, of course, but it was a big city. So I had Newman Theological College, St. Joseph's Seminary. I was very involved in the seminary and the theological college, dealing with various issues and things of that nature. It was a great experience, a wonderful diocese. And I thought, well, this is where I'm going to be for the rest of my life. So I moved the pension plan from Apple. This is the way you really know. Settled down my roots. And the Archbishop of Edmonton is the chair of the Alberta Bishops. So I was at a meeting of the Alberta Bishops in the boardroom, which we didn't have in St. Paul, down below. And I lived in a prison. It was a sort of a reform school for juvenile delinquent women, young women. And it was run by some sisters. And there was a big convent and then a house for the chaplain. And then there was the prison. And the prison, when the sisters turned it back over, the diocese of reform school was brought to an end. They were very few sisters then, good shepherd sisters. So the prison became the pastoral center. And there were these four houses on the property as halfway houses. And there was a fence all the way around the property, like it was a prison. And a fence near the big house, you know, which was the pastoral center. And I lived in one of the four, because you go into this place and you see up at the top of the stairs, there's a glassed-in thing where the matron would sit watching the, you know, they're trying to give the young ladies a sense of more of a home, you know. So that was my home for 8.5 years. And it was in the downstairs, a lot of rooms. So I put a bookcases in. I made it my chapel on my camp, put my books in. My sister said I looked like I needed a cat, so I did. So I had a couple of kitties when I was young. So they told me to get it. I always obey my sisters, so they said to get a cat. So I got a cat, beautiful little kitty, and he was like a cross between a Siamese cat and a Himalayan Persian. So he was chocolatey brown color, looked like a Siamese cat, but thick hair, which is not you. Dear Frodo is his name. I didn't think of giving him a name until my sister told me I should give him a name, because I thought calling him Rex, but he might have a, or Fido, but he might have an identity crisis. So I thought I'd call Frodo.
Frodo from the great Lord of the Rings.
Furry-footed creature. It was a dear kitty. And then eventually when I got moved to Toronto, I shipped him over and sent him. My sister took him in Guelph. And he got together with Buffy, their cat. They were good friends.
I just realized here, I mean, it's during your 8 years plus in Edmonton, we were blessed enough. Our high school reached for the top team, came to Edmonton, and we had mass at the Newman Center, I believe, at the University of Alberta.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yes. I remember us going to mass during spring of 2005. So you were still there. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. I would have been there. Yeah.
That's right. I don't remember seeing you, but
put you in prison as well, did they, Dennis?
No, they didn't. But reach for the top team did very well that year. And we were blessed to go out to the University of Alberta, blessed to have a beautiful mass at the Newman Center.
St. Joseph's there.
Yeah.
The Newman Center. I used to celebrate that mass called the Last Chance Mass. It was about 9:30 or so Sunday night. And after that, we go out to Timmy's and have a little coffee and stuff. And then all the students would stay up all night. I had to get up for a 7 o'clock mass on the morning, you know. And
yep.
It was great being Archbishop of Edmonton, and really, really. Yeah. And it had a seminary. It had, and of course, the seminary was in the path of a freeway. They had not thought of that. There was they had this ring road area, but there wasn't enough money, you know, so they were never going to build it, they thought. So St. Albert Trail, there was this St. Joseph Seminary, which the back part remained a residence, front part became Newman College. Then they got money, the government, so they started building the road. So it started approaching from the south, you know, and so they had argued to kind of exempt the seminary from having to get out of the way, you know. Well, you got a, you know, 10-lane freeway approaching or whatever. Mm-hmm. It is. What do you do? And I thought, well, that's not going to work. I mean, what's the point of being there in the middle of a multi-lane highway?
Right.
You don't have like the off-ramp go over the chapel. I didn't think that was a good idea.
Yeah, it doesn't make for very
serene,
faithful, you know, and fruitful worship in the chapel.
Oh,
when you
not so good. So I told the government, I said, well, no, we'd be glad to sell the land, because it's of no value, really, in a sense. But it is of value because it saved them millions on their rerouting their freeway. So I was negotiating with them and other people, and then finally, I got the call to be going to Toronto, and while this was still going on, so I thought, what am I? So I remember the week I was going to have pizza with some seminarians at the Sicilian Pasta Kitchen, which is right out the front of the cathedral in Edmonton. When you're sitting on the cathedral in Edmonton, you see the Sicilian Pasta Kitchen. And we don't own it, but we own the land, but we didn't own the building of the business. So I had a bunch of guys there. So one thing I realized, like from my learning from Bishop Ryan, that if you're going to lose, I was going to lose my authority on Saturday morning at 4 o'clock in the morning, because that's when it was announced. Once it's announced, you're toast. You don't
have. Yeah.
Right.
So I couldn't call them to order. So I called a bunch. I had got the letters written, dated before. And then over pizza, I was handing them out calls to orders on Friday night. And they must have wondered, what on earth is the bishop doing calling me to orders and over a pizza in the Sicilian Pasta Kitchen? And then I went home, went to bed, woke up at about 4. I thought, I'm no longer the Archbishop of Edmonton. It was announced December 16th, 2006.
That's right.
I was named. Once you're named with the Vatican as the new thing, the see is vacant then. And I was not yet installed. So the Cardinal Ambrosic continued, was made Apostolic Administrator of Toronto until I was installed, just as I was made Apostolic Administrator of Toronto. The large display was installed. So what the administrator can do is simply keep the machine running. It can't make decisions. You can't call to orders, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there we are. I did a quick trip down to Toronto to look around. I thought, you know, I stayed at the rectory. I thought, well, why not? You know, it's a great place, and there was a lot of work being done there. And so I spent my 16 years Archbishop of Toronto in the Cathedral Rectory.
And you were happy to be coming home closer to Guelph to your sisters?
Oh, yeah, it was good.
You know, and some of the things you did in Toronto, I know Robert will touch upon a lot of them, but I mean, I just think the seminary alone, Archbishop, you did make a number of changes within the seminary. You talk about your spiritual year, the Institute of Theology for lay people. Myself, I was able to get a degree during that time. A lot of lay people came back. So that was big. COVID alone, we could devote a full show to that and the transitions you made so nicely within the Archdiocese as well. But is there anything that you wanted to touch upon in your 16 years that was, you know, held special significance for you? Or
well, the most important is the seminary in terms of, and ORAT and the refugee office. And the refugee office. There's so many things.
Well, that's just, you could say and. But
I really great put work. A lot into extending and putting in the spiritual year in the seminary and working out the system, the way that people apply, like that they have time as in the associates program. Mm-hmm. So we get to know them well before they apply. And then they, and moving, shifting the frontier. It used to be that Sarah House here was sort of a place you stayed in before you decided to go into seminary. You're thinking about it, but it was a kind of discernment house. I don't think you discern things quite that way. You discern in the formation, the big discerning. Beforehand, you can think about, which I guess is discerning, but I don't like the word discernment anyway. Even grow up in Guelph, I maybe don't have the proper Jesuit spirit. Anyway, you think about it. So we do that now. So I thought, well, what we do is let's move the frontier to the beginning of Sarah House so that you, when you come into Sarah House, it's a seminary. You're as much a seminarian as if you're a deacon, you know. And you go through this psychological testing, the references, the thing, and we get to know you for a couple of years before. It's a crock pot, not a wok. That's the basic principle. It takes time.
And I like that.
And then I put in the spiritual year based on the Denver system. That was the bad one around places. And that's now required by the Vatican. It was being suggested when we put it in. So I've tuned it up very, you know, carefully. And I think what's happening is it does good. It's working well. I mean, look at these guys here. They've all been through this, I think, the spiritual year. They're wonderful. We got wonderful seminarians. We got wonderful priests coming out the other end. So, I mean, that's a great thing. And I just am, anyway, that's sort of my own particular vocation has been involved. And that's maybe why it's appropriate that I'm the Episcopal advisor for Sarah, the Sarah Club, which is involved with lay people praying for vocations. And I'm also the Canadian Episcopal advisor for the Canadian Sarah Club. And I was just down at a meeting a week ago down in Florida for the Sarah International, Sarah American Sarah.
And we've been truly blessed to get to know a few of the seminarians that have come through Sarah House and St. Augustine's Seminary during your tenure as Archbishop of Toronto. I'm thinking of, there was a former guest here on the show under a year ago, Keith Diaz.
He's down the hall. He's a great guy. Great guy.
And we got to know him when he was working with the Office of Catholic Youth. He came into the school. And Dennis always made a point of inviting the seminarians to come into the school to talk about vocations and to talk about their stories to the high school students,
So we had Father Matt McCarthy when he was a seminarian coming to Austin to speak to the he lives there. And Father Greg as well, we've had on the
Father Greg Merkley.
Who's in Hamilton. He was in as well. So we've had a few. That's been a blessing to our grade 12s. And but what about, you talk about the refugee. I'm not so familiar with that program that you're
Office of Refugees, Archdiocese of Toronto.
Okay.
And, Deacon Rudy is the one who's running it. Rudy Ovchak. He's really good. A wonderful staff there. They're in the same building as the youth office beside St. Peter's Church. Wonderful work. And I thought, you know, because the Christians especially are being massacred everywhere, they shouldn't have to be refugees. They should stay where they end, in their home. They've been in rejection. However, if the alternative is getting shot or murdered, as so many Christians are being murdered, the most persecuted people in the world are Christians. We got to get that You don't get that on the...
Unfortunately, the world doesn't recognize that.
No.
Yeah, so, but we try to reach out and help them. We had a lot, the Iraqi Christians, a lot. Well, we also would sponsor others, not only Christians, but I mean, we want to especially sponsor the most persecuted, and that is mainly, but not totally Christian. So we have a very, I put a lot of emphasis into the Office of Refugees, Archdiocese of Toronto, which ORAD is also the word he prays, so it's kind of nice in Latin. Mm-hmm. But and they were wonderful people. They really know what they're doing. So that's been a big thing. Also, like the pastoral plan I did a lot of consulting. I guess they call it synodality these days, but I did a lot of consulting with people. But when I came shortly after that, I said, what are the three things to which we should devote attention in the next few years? I got about two big binders, especially from the priests.
Ask questions like that.
You know, so there we are. So I read them through, and I told them, I won't tell anyone what you specifically said, but I'll report the general themes. So that's what kind of helped. And a lot of prayer, a lot of thinking of the Acts of the Apostles and stuff. And so basically it's vibrant parishes, and then formation of lay people. And you mentioned one, and the lay people, deacons, priests, a lot of, and then caring for the needy, and then evangelize the culture. So for the vibrant parishes, because we do notice that the people are aging and there's a secular culture and all that. So we need to have what do we do with the vibrant parishes? Well, we had to think good leaders, good shepherds to help train the priests in leadership. People complain about the homilies. So we have a big homiletic thing for many years now to make sure the homilies are better. We need to have pastoral wisdom. So we brought in people like Father Knott from the States, and he had these great lines. He had a thing like, put your money in the music, your time in the homily, and stand at the door of the church. Very wise. Hmm. He also said something about when you want to get something, again, starting with something specific, it's easier to wear slippers than to carpet the world. And that's very wise. Start somewhere.
I'm going to back that up, though, a little bit. I think they should be putting the money into the lay pastoral associate, but we'll leave, and just to let you know, Your Eminence, too, like that's my role at St. Bernadette Parish now in Ajax.
I'm retired. I don't make decisions anymore.
You don't make those decisions anymore, but yeah.
Yeah, but no, in all seriousness, that family of faith fund that you introduced, Eminence, that allowed for youth minister. Caught up to the States in a lot of those respects where they had these parishes with these paid positions and vibrant, and we were able to hire LPAs.
Open so many doors.
So important for the parishes.
What I would tell these people, I'd be trying to talk to billionaires and people like others. Hmm. We asked for $105 million. We got about 140 or something like that. Most of it from the regular parishioners of the parish. Mm-hmm. A lot of it going to the local parish, because once you get up to your quota, whatever, it's based upon your collection and stuff. Before that, it was 75% to the diocese for, diocesan projects and 25% to the parish. Mm-hmm. After that, it was 75% to the parish and 25% to the diocese. But it's all to the diocese, all to the parish.
Right.
So that Family of Faith campaign helped fund youth ministry and lay pastoral assistance, everything. It did not so much fund the rebuilding of the cathedral.
And I was going to say that the rebuilding of the cathedral, Robert and myself, was beautiful. But
yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous.
That is more, that's partly the final thing, evangelize the culture, because it's a sign that we're not shutting down. We're on the march. This is the Christ has risen. And so I noticed the doors were sort of peeling. I thought, well, let's fix that. Then fix everything. We found that the pillars of the cathedral were made of 1847 brick that was crumbling into dust, and what looked like stone was actually plaster. And at one point, one of the pillars twisted and began to snap. So, although, believe me now, there are beams of steel down right to bedrock now. And that, this still isn't stone. It's probably some kind of plastic, but it's got television cameras in it and everything else. So it is solid. And we found that the things were falling off the tower. So that's all fixed now. So it was a structural thing. We also put a basement in. It was just a crawl space, basically. And so a lot of things were done. That's evangelizing the culture, because beauty, truth, and goodness. Beauty attracts beauty, also the music. That's why the St. Michael's Choir School is so important.
Right.
Music, beauty, visual and audible and all that kind of stuff. And that draws people in. Then you lead to truth and then to goodness. So that's a big part. But most of the funding of that came in other ways through, you know, some donation people different. And then we're all just spreading it over time. But the Family of Faith was $25 million when it went to the cathedral. But most of it went to the parishes, really, and the seminary and stuff like that.
Well, I'm really glad that you're saying that, Your Eminence, because for a lot of people, they saw that all of the money that they were putting into the Family of Faith was being sent to the cathedral.
Yeah, no, that's not where they are. It just happened that they were happening around the same time that the pillars were snapping at the time we needed to fund the ministry. So we had them at the same time. But it was not what happened. It looked a bit like what happened. So, you know, if you're going to have vibrant parishes too, we had the stewardship, which is not money, say, you know, being prudent with money. It is getting people involved, entrusted with mission in the church. And money will come in due time. And so all those things were help make vibrant parishes, which helps a lot of things, you know. And then having the formation of priests, that's great, and formation of lay people at the seminary and then at other things. And then, you know, that's the formation. And then, of course, we've had Share Life for years. Right. But other things like the Office of Refugees, that's caring for the needy. And Evangelize the Culture is university ministry, dealing with education, dealing with communications, a lot of communication things we do. Also the cathedral and the choir school, Evangelize the Culture and reaching out into society. So that's just a little bit on the four pillars of the pastoral plan. Now, Archbishop Leo is now doing a further consultation. It's about time to do it 10 years later. He'll be getting whatever suggestions there are, and he'll think of what new directions go. So, but those are the things that's what was 10 years ago when I 16 years ago when I started. And so
it's hard to believe it's been that long.
You know, it's the parish thing was the stewardship thing and the training of the priests and the homiletics thing and all that. And then the training was the emphasis on the seminary and all that we talked about. Then but the evangelizing culture was the one, because what's the point of you know, fixing the wound when it's, you don't go to the source of it, or, you know, deal with the
100%.
You can, rather than deal with the symptoms, deal with the cause, and that's evangelizing culture. We're in a very antagonistic culture. That's also why it's important to have highly trained lay people and priests and deacons, religious, to take the what God has given us in terms of different talents, many gifts, and have them trained to be. That's why education is so important, why Catholic education is important, despite struggles we face.
That's all. Catholic education is a whole other conversation that could take up 2 or 3 hours as well.
I think it probably could, and maybe it's one I would not be able to get.
And I think that's a conversation we have better when the record button hasn't been pressed.
That's probably wise. I think that's right. I will.
But that was why the education mass was so important, is you would speak to teachers in late August, teachers that wanted to be at that mass and have, and you gave a great talk afterwards at dinner, Your Eminence, to say, listen, it's still an important vocation and we still have a role within Catholic education, all of us.
You're trying to encourage people, and also the young teachers mass. It was also a voluntary, totally voluntary. And then the Catholic Teachers Guild is extremely important. Very, very important. So there are good things, really good things, but there are also struggles, which maybe we'll talk about now.
And I was just talking with a young teacher. She is in her second, maybe third year of teaching. And we were talking about the permeation of the Catholic faith through the classroom. And she was like, I want to do so much more of that. I just want...
Oh, good.
It's not the explicit teaching of the Catholic faith, but just that the Catholic faith is just part of the identity of her classroom.
That's the way to do it. You know, that's very important.
Right. And so it's such a blessing.
It's why people have sacrificed for this and why they struggle for it. And it is what is, unfortunately, we face social pressures, which are antagonistic to Catholic faith, to Christian faith, to reason, in fact, faith and reason. And they're being pushed, I mean, better not say too much, but pushed by all kinds of political forces. And they are utterly antagonistic to the Catholic faith and to life, fruitful life. And so that's why. But I always try to figure, rather than I would always talk about these things bluntly behind the scenes, because of, you know, mixed effect. But the thing is, I always follow Bishop Sheen saying, fill the box with salt and there's no room for the pepper. So rather than concentrating 80% of the time on the things that are wrong, I try to concentrate on the things that are right, like the Catholic Teachers Guild and others, and build them up. And then 20% of the time on the things that are the problems, which we all know, unfortunately.
I'd like to switch gears a little bit at this point, Your Eminence, and without going into any great secrets, but having you here at the table with us, this conversation, there is a little bit of conclave curiosity, I guess would be the best way I would put it.
Conclave curiosity.
We're not going to ask who voted for who, or who else was on the. But just what could you share? What is it like to be in a conclave?
Oh, it's amazing. It's very moving experience, very prayerful and very astonishing, really. And, you know, you have, I stay at the place I usually stay at in Rome, a kind of a residence. And then I walk over every day for a few weeks for the pre-conclave, where as the cardinals start arriving from all over the place, we discussed each one. Everyone has a chance to say something for a while. And then they have presentations on the different issues facing the church. And then once the last cardinal arrived and the two who couldn't come were excused, we were ready to go. So then we set the date for the actual conclave, which was the next week. And when that happened, we all moved into the Casa Santa Marta. You kind of go in like going into an airport, you go through a metal detector and a whole bit, and they take you up to your room, which has seals on it, like sealed things, and they open it up.
But you already had the experience of living in the prison in Edmonton, so you were good to go.
Yeah, this was more like a prison. And you have these sort of slats in all these European houses. Now they're all down, locked in place. The TV and everything was disconnected. They had jamming devices around the building. So you really were isolated, which is what they want. And then after you settle in, you can come in, and then you go down and they had dinner. And then... what did we do? I forget what it is. We had then a, well, I remember the next day, I think we had a mass for the Holy Spirit at the beginning, and then lunch. And then we headed over for the starting vote, and you march in that magnificent procession, chant, lifting the saints as you're going in through that big,
beautiful
thing, go in and then you make a turn and there is a Sistine Chapel. Oh my gosh. Very well organized. You end up right at your place with your name on it. It's just it's amazing. I was right under the finger of God, you might say.
Whoa.
The ceiling where the two like that was, that's where, so if I ever want to know where I was, that's where I was. But and then you you have a prayer service basically, and then you have one vote. They have the first vote that first day after the mass and stuff like that. And then you go and have dinner. But the one vote gives you a sense of who has most votes. There's ones and twos and threes, maybe a whole bunch, but there are a few that had tens and 15s and 20s. You know,
okay.
No nominating process for Pope. It's just you vote. And you have these big kind of like newsprint sheets with all the names on them, not alphabetically, but by order of seniority, so you can't consider where they are. And as they, once you're doing the vote, well, first they had the guy gave a little homily encouraging us, and then he left, and then everyone was gone, and then they locked conclave. They locked the door, whomp, like that. Then the head of Cardinal Ray, who was the highest ranking one in the conclave, said any questions. And then we started. They picked out of a bag, they picked three names to be the scrutineers, and they sit at a table in the center of the Sistine Chapel, and they take their place, and then...
Sorry, can they still be chosen, Your Eminence?
Yeah, oh, sure, everyone.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, everybody, yeah.
And then you start up by order of seniority. I think it starts with the most junior, probably. Going up, you have cardinal deacons, cardinal priests, and cardinal bishops. They're all cardinals, so it doesn't really matter. Most of them, almost all, are bishops too. But well, they are all bishops pretty well, because the cardinal deacon is, because originally the Pope was elected by the deacons of Rome, the priests, the parish priests, and the neighboring bishops elected the bishop of Rome. So they were hinges. That's what cardinal means, a hinge. So the hinge bishops, priests, and deacons of the region. They, you know, they did that. And gradually they wanted, since the Pope was so important, they extended it to so I'm an honorary parish priest to the priest of the parish of St. Patrick in Rome. I'm a cardinal priest of San Patrizio. Usually bishops of dioceses are cardinal priests. Bishops who are working in the Vatican in an office are cardinal deacons. And from among the cardinal priests, the Pope picks some to be cardinal bishops. And one of them is elected and approved by the Pope as cardinal dean. He's the dean of the college. So that's what's just, they're all the one vote. So you go up and you have this card with this crease in the middle, and it says Eligo in Summum Pontificum, and then a line. I choose as Pope a line. You put the name. And then you go up and you look up at the Last Judgment, and they have a little card to read out in Latin. And it says, I promise that the one I'm voting for is the one I truly believe should be Pope. And then you fold it over, you put it up, you drop it in this big silver container. Then you go back. Once everyone has done that, said the prayer and dropped the thing, the container is taken to the central table and they count the ballots first. They count them from one container to another. And they have to have the right number of those voters in the room.
Make sure nobody dropped in too. I think keeping in mind the gentlemen that are in the room, nobody's going to be dropping in too.
Well, you never know. Most of the cardinals in the Last Judgment are going to hell, so we just keep that in mind. You know?
Are they counting aloud, Your Eminence, or is it?
Well, actually... You count, yeah, I'll count aloud.
Okay, yeah.
And because
I'm recording it, of course.
And they just one, two, three, and so they do that, and we all notice that. We're all listening to it. We're all the scrutineers, I guess everyone in the room is. Then they take the second one, now has all these there, and they count. Then one takes a look at the ballot, hands it to a second one, he looks at it, hands it to the third one, who calls out the name. And then we check, like each, all of us were just checking a vote for that person. Mm-hmm. And then they take it and they put it on, put the ballot on a kind of a needle, goes onto a string, so they tie them up. And then the next one, they look, one looks, and then they call it out. Then they put it on through the needle onto the string. So they gradually know it's not to be voted again. And then gradually, the first day, what you get is a scattering. Nobody gets the 2/3, you know, right? It'd be unusual. Could happen, I guess. But you know then who has got blocks of votes, who is likely. And so then you go and have dinner, a lot of praying, a lot of talking, all this kind of stuff. And then you come back, you have prayer, you have mass the next day, and then you go and you start another ballot. And they burn, of course, famously burn the ballots and then put in some chemical to make a black smoke. And then gradually the ones and twos and threes disappear and glom onto one of the other bigger ones. You get fewer, but some people get a vote every time, no matter what, you know, but mostly you're fewer names, you know, and you just keep checking. Everyone's checking, and they take also that sheet and burn it as well. And then we went for lunch, and then we came back, and we had Cardinal Bergoglio went over the 2/3, and we all kind of clapped, and they kept them. They weren't finished counting the ballots, so they got the final ballot. And then Cardinal Ray asked him to come forward and said, do you accept? And he said some various things, including I accept, and asked him what name did he choose, and he mentioned Francis of Assisi, Francis. Could be Francis Xavier for a Jesuit. Mm-hmm.
Of course, yeah.
And then he was escorted into the Room of Tears, they call it. Mm-hmm. And off he went, and he put on the white robes, came out. We all went up and greeted him, congratulated him, and offered him our prayers. And
it's beautiful. That's just so amazing to hear.
Well, it's good, too, because
firsthand.
I didn't know him at all before, really, but he had written to me. Because a member of Buenos Aires Diocese that moved to Toronto and had died and had willed some stuff to the diocese. So he said, do you have a lawyer who could handle it for our diocese? So I wrote back, sure, we'll get our diocese lawyer to handle it. So we did. We got that, and I don't know how it worked, but somehow the inheritance got sent to Buenos Aires. So when I came up to the Holy Father, there he was, newly there, and he looked at me. I said, Thomas Collins from Toronto, congratulations, many prayers doing your work. And he said, thank you. Pray for me. and thank you for the lawyer.
But that always blows my mind.
That's good.
Whether it's Pope Francis, Benedict XVI, St. John Paul II, the memory capacity to pull something like that out in just that you'd never met face to face as such before.
Well, it was something
to have that.
Yeah. I want to go back just a year or two before that, though. Your Eminence, just quickly talk about the phone call where His Holy Father Benedict XVI decided that you would get the red hat. Can you?
That was, again, everything just comes.
A few years into your episcopy at episcopy.
It was 2012, I guess it was.
Yeah.
And I was in Washington D.C. at a residence where I was working on the translations of liturgical texts. So we worked hard and worked. And my mind was in all kinds of struggles we're facing back with schools and other systems. But anyway, we got the work finished early. So some of the guys, let's go take a little tour of Washington. I said, I'm going to go back. I got to do some work in the hotel room. So I got back to the hotel room and I looked at a flashing light. So I said, yes, we have a message from the nunciature in Ottawa. You're to call this number. So I said, okay. So I called the number, and it wasn't the nuncio, it was his assistant. And he said, I've been told to inform you that tomorrow morning the Pope will name you a cardinal. And I said, I said, can I tell anyone? No one. You tell no one. So immediately I told him, get me a flight out of here. I got to go home.
Yeah.
Back. So I immediately, I left a note for everyone else. Sorry, got to go. And checked out of the hotel, grabbed a bite to eat at a neighboring restaurant, headed for the airport and got my ticket in and got back to Toronto. So that next morning, when it was noon, but it was 6 in the morning for us, when Pope Benedict was reading out at the Mass, he said, and I am naming as cardinals. And so you don't want to send, I told Neil McCarthy, let's get things ready. We were both listening to get the message out. But you don't send the message until you hear it, actually.
You hear it. Why such short notice, though, Your Eminence? Why just the night before? I'm just curious as to why not a week or two to get yourself...
shorter now.
Oh, is it really?
Pope Francis doesn't give any notice.
Nothing?
No.
Wow.
So it was just a way of making sure nothing leaks. You know?
Nothing leaks, of course.
So people are listening for it. They're just doing their work. And say, by the way, do you hear you've been made a... Mm-hmm. Oh, had I? Oh, who's that?
Okay.
There it is.
Yeah.
It's just, I think that's partly what it is. Mm-hmm. It said Thomas Collins. It's okay. At that point, push the button. We announced it, and then we did the head media interviews and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be odd. Just say, look, nice. We need to have a press conference, but we can't tell anybody why.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't work. And, you know, at the last minute, you can never know. He could leave it out. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's like there was one very, very fine cardinal who many people thought was going to be elected Pope. And his group that he was with, when the white smoke went up, sent out the notice that he had been elected Pope. And he had not.
Oops.
That's embarrassing.
Egg on your face.
No.
So you have to take a little time. You know?
No. Yeah. Can't wait too long.
There we are.
It's been a year now that you've been retired. Mm-hmm. Dennis here is retiring at the end of this school year. So he's got a semester left. He's getting into his last semester of teaching.
And Robert just retired in June, so we're about a year apart from retirement here.
You're kind of two old codgers, I guess you'd say that, right?
One of us is older than the other, but we'll just leave it at that.
We'll let you guess.
Yeah. you don't want to put him on the spot with that one. So to ask with that, Your Eminence, is there any retirement advice that you would have for the old codger Dennis here?
No, just keep busy. I mean,
I've got plans for him.
Move on. That's the thing, you know, everything has its time and a season for everything. It's a good line for the Bible. And so like what I've done, I was going full tilt 100% up to March 25th, 2023. As either bishop, and then after February 11th as administrator, I was spending all kinds of time preparing the new bishop with everything I could think of that he might need. And then after that, and what it's like, I found, is like when you're Archbishop of Toronto, incredibly intense, like doing a doctorate every day, and to you going down this like a very busy super highway like the 401, and then you move on to a exit ramp, and you head off to a country road and you see the big highway disappear off into the distance. And then you're driving along a country road. You're just not half on the big road. You're not on it at all. You're on a different road. So I
and you're enjoying the scenery a lot more, maybe. Yeah, now. Well, it's true, you know, taking the time to smell the roses.
Delighted we got a wonderful new bishop. So that helps, you know, it helps a lot. So I am he's doing great work. He'll do his own, he'll see it the way God guides him to see it. And I am very one thing, I'm very active. I've got retreats lined up heaven everywhere, and I'm doing podcasts like this. I'm doing all kinds of things. But I've already been down in St. John, New Brunswick, doing a day of prayer on the Psalms for the priest at Corner Brook in St. John. And then I was out in Alberta doing a retreat for the priests of Edmonton. And then I just got back from, I went out, did a retreat for the priests of Ottawa, Cornwall. And then I just, in January, just a few weeks ago, at British Columbia doing a retreat for the Western bishops. And I just came back a few days ago from Miami for a meeting of the Sarah American thing. And then I'm heading off. I've got retreats for Michigan, Ohio bishops, and also the priests of Prince George, the priests of St. Catharines, the Precious Blood Sisters I'm going to be doing for 2 weeks. And then I've got the talks in Grand Rapids. I mean, it's a lot.
So like Robert, you're retired, but you're not really retired.
Yeah,
but I don't have to worry about problems so much. I mean, that's the new bishop. It's a wonderful bishop.
Right.
It's beautiful. And I'm living in a wonderful community. It's all of our seminarians, not only the ones here, but the ones
beautiful.
They're just great.
And so you've got good things to look forward to here, Dennis.
Good. Yes, absolutely. I'm looking forward to, you know what, and Robert has got me on the church, helping out with the RCIA program this year, Your Eminence, and that's been a blessing. I can't believe the great people coming into the church. I'm just so inspired every Tuesday when we go out and listen to their stories. And so that's been a blessing. And who knows what next year.
His Eminence isn't fully aware of this. So like I alluded to just before, I retired from teaching last June. I'm actually now the lay pastoral associate at St. Bernadette in Ajax with Father Chris Lemieux,
who
was your vocations director. Mm-hmm. Which is also Dennis's parish. So I say I was hired to keep Dennis on the straight and narrow.
It's a difficult task, but someone has to do it.
Exactly. Exactly.
He keeps checking my collection offering every Sunday.
That's it.
But I keep teasing him too, because I know he's retiring. And like I keep saying, I've got plans for you. I've got plans for you, all of these different programs. And you talk about vibrant parishes. St. Bernadette's is such a beautiful and vibrant parish and great people there. And great things are going on.
Don't forget the best laid plans of mice and men have often gone awry, as Cardinal Collins will at the English major. Do I have time for my rapid fire? Are you?
I was going to say,
yeah,
Your Eminence, if you're okay, just as we wrap up here, and it's been a beautiful conversation. Dennis had a bunch of questions for you, and you have the right to pass, because we don't want to throw any of your Cardinal colleagues under the bus.
Yeah.
You got to think
of your fellow cardinals in the last 15, 16 years. And I just have 10 quick questions.
Okay.
And you can answer or pass depending. Okay. If you don't have a name, if you can't think of a name off the top of your head, you're more than willing to pass. So it shouldn't take more than a minute or two to get through. Okay. So which cardinal is, that's going to be the, which cardinal is the most cerebral?
Most cerebral? Oh, I don't know. Mueller, I guess.
Okay. The hardest working.
I don't know.
Thomas Cardinal Collins.
I think we can answer a lot of these for yourself there.
I don't know.
Okay. The best athlete.
Hmm?
The best athlete. Which one was a really good athlete? Was there any conversation about one who.
No, there used to be. Cardinal Creanie Thorne was a basketball player, but he's now over 80. So I don't know.
There you go. Okay. Cardinal speaks the most languages.
Oh, dear. I don't know. A lot of them speak a lot of languages. I'm not sure.
Tough to say. Is the funniest?
Oh, gosh.
Was there one who just a sense of humor?
Bishop Cardinal Dolan is always joking.
He seems like... Okay, well, this is the next question, which probably be the same answer. Has the best laugh? Was that
Cardinal Dolan, definitely.
That would be the same, too. Okay.
His highs are my... What is it? Somebody said, his lows are my highs. You know, he's a very... Yeah. Really kind of guy.
Cardinal exudes holiness.
Cardinal Sarah.
Which cardinal always has a smile on his face?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I don't know. Dolan, I guess, too. He's pretty...
Dolan, he does. Which cardinal, almost done, is the best public speaker?
Oh. I don't know. I can't think of anyone.
It's good. I'm stumping your eminence.
They would all have to be fairly good at public speaking.
Finally, and I think you could probably give a lot of answers to this one, yourself included, which cardinal is the most humble?
Well, I think humility is a very important virtue, and I think every cardinal prides himself on his humility.
That's a bit of an oxymoron there, Your Eminence. But...
I know. Among my many virtues, humility is certainly number one.
Who said that?
I love it.
Actually, I believe one of your old confreres, Father Dennis Noon, once said, Your Eminence, Cardinal Collins' greatest gift is humility.
Oh, my.
And I think Father Corrigan once said, one of your old professors says, the smartest person he's taught in 46 years at the seminary was yours truly, Cardinal Collins.
Oh, my.
And we end on that note, Monsieur Robert, and Your Eminence.
So, and Your Eminence, you seem a little bit, we would say in French, bouche-bée, like a... but what Dennis is saying, it's been our experience, too, anytime that we've met you.
Absolutely. Right?
A humble erudition, like just a very...
Down to earth,
and this has been such a fantastic conversation.
Oh, great. I love it. Let's do it again.
What are you doing tomorrow at this time? Right?
We're going to get you.
We say that, you know, we'll have a coffee. We'll head to the Chapel of St. Timothy Horton.
Down when we're down at the University of Toronto campus, and we'll pass by Sarah House or something like that. That would be really nice to pop in to see you.
Yeah, well, that'd be great. I'm around here most of the time. There might be a wave, so let me know. Great. There's not many many coffee shops around here as much as there were around the cathedral, which is right in the center of town.
They have one in the Newman Center in the basement in the Newman
Center?
No,
they used to have one. Yeah, but there is a place on Bloor Street is about a 7 or 8 minute walk south here, coming down to George, right across the intersection. There's a coffee shop there, and then there's a restaurant to the west a bit. Those are the closest I get to my inevitable my friends. I used to go to all the time.
Oh, friends, of course, yeah.
Yeah, but that was a 5 minute walk away, and all kind of very wide menu and all this. The restaurant around here is more at the hotel restaurant, so it has a very limited menu, you know. But it's what we have.
Oh, please God, we can do that one day.
Yeah, for sure. The next time we're able to get ourselves hopping downtown. And just before we let you go as well, Your Eminence, just a couple of things. But first of all, we know you're a Tilly hat kind of guy.
Mm.
But oh, yeah. Dennis and I will get into the mail for you. And we do have the address for Sarah House, one of our Pints and Pews ball caps here for you to
Oh,
to
splendid.
Have.
Splendid. Yeah. Most of my hats are pointed, but that's a very... not, that's not, so that's good.
It's not a Beretta and it's not a Zucchetto, okay. but
it's got the red. So
it's got a little bit of red on there. And then too, just before we say goodbye, if you could please give ourselves and our listeners a blessing.
Okay, certainly. Well, may the Lord bless you and keep you and be always with you, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen.
Great. There we are.
Thank you so much, Your
Eminence. Thank you so very much, Your Eminence.
Such a pleasure talking to you.
Okay. God bless. Bye bye.
Dennis, buddy, I am so happy that you pushed and you pushed and you, we're in season 4 and since episode 1, you've been saying, let's get Cardinal Collins. Let's get the Cardinal. Let's get Cardinal Collins. And I was like, yeah, no, he's not going to come on the Pints and Pews. We'll never get him. And you kept pushing, send out the invite.
Yeah,
sent out the invite, and literally within 20 minutes, the answer was, I'd love to come on the podcast.
You know what? And that's, we talked about his humility, and that's it right there. Why don't I go on this podcast? But the thing about it is too, Robert, I would say, well, he was too busy in the first couple episodes as Archbishop, but he seems just as, in this first couple of years as when we're doing the podcast, but he's just as busy now.
Busier than ever.
How many retreats is he doing? Did he mention? Like he's flying like every everywhere for this retreat, right? And he seems like he's enjoying life. He seems relaxed. He seems, you know, very affable. He's a very affable young gentleman.
See all the things you have to look forward to in a few months' time there, buddy?
You think I'll have a memory like his at 77, Robert?
Buddy, you don't have a memory like his now.
I know. Could you, the way he was going through his, you know, early years and time in Edmonton and his time is, and what about
maybe we've had too many pints and too few pews.
Pews. What about the conclave? How do you have a recollection of that? I mean, that was over 10 years ago, wasn't it?
One would think that's a once in a lifetime experience for most that are even there, and how few men on the planet have the ability to say, I was at a conclave that elected a pope.
Right.
Right. And for me, that was the highlight of our conversation over the two episodes.
Yeah, that was probably there.
And such a blessing that he agreed to stay on to talk about his time as Archbishop of Toronto.
Right. And not to mention all his work as Archbishop of Toronto. And he did touch upon those things. And those were very important in his 16, 17 years. He did a lot. He left a legacy, that's for sure, Robert.
Yeah. And I think it's great for the people of the Archdiocese of Toronto and beyond. To hear all of the great things that he did, because as he was saying, like all of the work he did with the seminary, like that was taken from his experience in collegiality with other bishops and their seminaries, but then that he himself was in the Vatican Council for seminaries to help develop seminary life through the whole church.
The spiritual year was crucial, brought that into Toronto. And you know, lengthen the program and, you know, making sure Sarah House was part of, you know, the seminary. Yeah, did a lot. Yeah,
like that just blew me away when you think about seminary life from when he was ordained. He said, as he said, he had 3 8-month stints at the seminary before he was ordained a deacon and then would have been a year. And then he's a priest. And we're now, it's what, an 8-year process?
Yeah, it's at least 6 years for sure. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, you have to have the philosophy, the theology, and then, you know, your spiritual year.
I think there's a lot of wisdom in that and makes for stronger vocations.
You have to. You have to have those years. You don't want to rush it, right? It's a lifetime vocation. You can't rush that for sure.
And that's the same way the church approaches marriage, is that you don't rush it. Mm-hmm. People come to the church. The church says you need a minimum of 1 year notice before you get married in the church. And there's a lot of wisdom that comes from that year.
Absolutely. Right? Not to mention the marriage prep course too. But
and that's the beauty of vocations, whether it's vocation to the married life or vocation to holy orders, is the time needs to go in to make sure that you're getting it right.
Right. And I almost wish we had cut him off after the hour just so we could kind of interview him in 6 months again. But you know what? We've already had Keith in as a second guest, so maybe His Eminence will come back on the show within a year's time, please God, and tell us about his retirement again.
I'm just looking to heading into the big smoke and you know, having a chance just to sit down in a coffee shop and chat, without the microphones on.
Yes.
Like that's those are sometimes the better.
And we could talk about that maybe in our one-on-one podcast, our conversation. You know, we saw His Eminence and he's doing well and mentioned that. Yeah, you're getting into the city of Toronto for you, downtown Toronto, Rivera. It's a big thing.
That is a big experience for those of us up here in the sticks.
I didn't live too far from where he is now when I was at the University of Toronto back in the day, back in the horse and buggy.
I was back when they called it Muddy York.
But you know what? I'm surprised when he's in his seminary he didn't have a car to go from Guelph to Hamilton. He had to take the bus and the tram. And I'm thinking,
and the train,
car would have been so much quicker. Anyhow, we digress.
But that's just the change in times as well, right? And that's one of those conversations. I started off with my Chimay red cap in honor of the Cardinal. We had to have the red cap, which was really a pint and a half. And such a wonderful, faith-filled conversation. The Chimay red cap is done. I'm on to a Leff, another Trappist beer here as well, buddy. The time just flew by. The time just flew by. How was your Sleeman's?
Sleeman's was good and done. Much done.
We won't go into second the conversation about your adventure Premier. To find the Sleeman's.
Yeah, we'll try that later on. But yeah, that's we've got to get poor His Eminence a a couple of Sleeman's beers there in retirement, since he put Guelph on the map of the church.
Either that, or we have to, you know, maybe have him come one day. We'll do a pilgrimage back to Bavaria, and
yes,
we can do the monastery tour there, and maybe he'll have, you know, his third beer,
his third Stein, fourth beer. Yes.
Right. But Dennis, the time seems to have flown by. The hour glass, this is the 2 hour glass,
yeah,
is pretty much empty.
Always a pleasure, Robert, both the pint and the conversation.
I want to say especially the pint, but I think you probably have other plans for that.
Yes. But always, it's a pleasure to talk about our Catholic faith with His Eminence, and inside, you know, a person who is certainly a shepherd of us for the last 16, 17 years.
Very true. Very true. Now, just before we wrap up here, my friend, perhaps there's just one small favor we could ask of our listeners.
If you could take a moment and a couple of clicks to follow us on the Pints and Pews podcast on your favorite platform and give us a review.
While you're at it, give us a like on Facebook, follow us on Instagram or the platform formerly known as Twitter, drop us a line at any one of those places, or send us an email at pintsandpews@gmail.com. We always enjoy hearing from our listeners.
And as well, stop by catholicmoment.ca, where you can peruse our beautiful caps, t-shirts, and Robert's two books, which you can purchase at catholicmoment.ca.
And then, Dennis, finally, why don't you remind our listeners of the wise words of G.K. Chesterton that do appear on our t-shirts?
In Catholicism, the pint, the pipe, and the cross can all fit together.
God bless.
Take care, my friend.